Hey, I'm really, really glad that you are here. Some of our favorite people in the world are with us today as our guests, and you're going to get to hear from them in just a moment. And we're going to have an opportunity to literally transform lives before we leave here today, and I'm excited about that. When my son was in high school, he was driving the two of us down Veterans Parkway in the rain. And as we approached the intersection of Veterans and Monroe, which some of you passed through on your way here today, the stoplight turned yellow, and I said, "Don't stop, buddy." The pavement was wet. It did not make sense for having to hit the brakes. I was concerned the car behind us might hit us. It was a split-second call that I suspect nearly all of us would have made. However, the police were monitoring that intersection closely that day, and the officer who saw us travel through it concluded that Evan should have stopped. And he pulled Evan over and he looked through the driver's side window at me. So I stepped up and I said, "I told him to stop." Kid just won't listen. No, I confessed that I told him not to stop, but the officer gave Evan a ticket in spite of my explanation. Well, later that day, I joked with a police officer friend that I had led my son into a life of crime. So he offered to look into the ticket, and guess what happened? The ticket was never processed. Someone who knew me provided extraordinary help for my son and for me. And what did I do? What would you have done? Well, I did the same thing you would have done. I accepted the help because I couldn't bring myself to decline. When we have an opportunity to benefit from special treatment, most of us gladly accept. But how often do we provide the extraordinary help that other people need? I read about a man who was recently upgraded to first class on a long flight, who then traded seats with a woman flying in coach because she was active duty military and he wanted to thank her. That is impressive selflessness. But I could not help but wonder if I could be that selfless, if I could be that sacrificial in that moment. And here's a question that all of us should ask and answer. Do I believe in providing extraordinary help, or do I only believe in receiving it? Because we all want to receive it. It's another question when it's our turn to provide it. Well, Jesus shared a story about a man who gave extraordinary assistance to someone whom he never met, a stranger. And it is a story that Jesus offered as a template for you and me and how we should live and how we should respond when we become aware of a need. And here's how it happened. Jesus was challenging people to love their neighbors when someone in the crowd asked, "Okay, Jesus, but who is my neighbor? Who qualifies as a neighbor?" And Jesus replied with a story, as he often did. Jesus said, a Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. So here is a man who needs big time help, big time assistance. And apparently, it is this man's lucky day, because a priest and a temple employee are traveling the same road that he is traveling right behind him. But sadly, disappointingly, those religious elites do not stop and help the man. He is bleeding, but they do not bandage his wounds. He is naked, but they do not cover him. Nor do they send someone to help him. Then a Samaritan man came upon this poor man. Now, in Jesus' day, Jewish people ridiculed the Samaritans. The Samaritans were often the punchline in jokes and off-color stories, and they were considered socially and morally inferior. But in Jesus' story, the Samaritan man does everything the men with religious credentials should have done. He treats the man's wounds, he covers him. He lifts the man onto his own donkey. The Samaritan apparently walks the rest of the trip while the wounded man rides his donkey. And he then pays for a room in a hotel to allow the man time to recover. And he stays with him until the man can care for himself. And eventually the Samaritan goes on with his journey, but not before paying the innkeeper to watch out for the man for as long as he needs it. And you cannot read this story without wondering, without reflecting on a question: which character in this story am I most like? Which one represents me? Would I have made excuses for why I couldn't help? Well, I'm so busy. My resources are thin. I don't have this kind of time to spare. Or would I have gone out of my way in every way to help this man? Friend, compassion is the most powerful when it is the most personal. Some people see a need and say, someone should do something. Someone should do something. Almost self-righteously, we say that. Others see a need and think, I have to do something. After Jesus finished telling the story, he asked the man in the crowd, the one who asked, hey, who qualifies as my neighbor? He asked that man, which man in the story was a neighbor to the injured man? And the man correctly replied, the one who showed him mercy. And then Jesus replied, yes, now go and do the same. And I think all of us realize that Jesus was not just speaking to that man on that occasion, in that place. Jesus was speaking to all of us to go and do likewise. You know, people sometimes say that the Bible is hard to understand, and there are parts of the Bible that you really can't understand until you know some of the background and context. But I think the Bible is much harder to obey than it is to understand. It is easy to understand what Jesus is teaching here. It is also difficult to do when we are faced with a moment like the one the Samaritan faced. I mentioned our special guests a moment ago. They are two people who completely altered not just their plans for the day, but the direction of their lives to assist people who need extraordinary help. And one of the great privileges of my life has been to be friends with them and to partner with them in what they are doing. Many of you partner with them too, through trips, through the support of children. If you have not met Wallace and Mary Kamau before, I will introduce you in a moment, but let's watch this video first.
My name is Istin. I'm 11 years old. I have lived in Madare Valley my whole life. I was born to be a street girl. We all wish we could go to school, but many kids like me can't afford to go. They don't have much to do. They just stay home. Before I joined Missions of Hope, life was so hard. Sometimes we didn't have enough food to eat. My mom would go on the street to look for food. We could go without food even for a day. One day, my mother told me she found a school for me. I asked, which school? She said, Missions of Hope. Now that I'm at Missions of Hope, I'm in school. I'm learning so much. Math is my favorite subject. I'm eating two meals a day. They provide us health care and we can see the dentist. I gained confidence being in school. I even lead our school music team. I want to be a musician when I grow up. Missions of Hope is like a family to me. I feel that like I'm loved. I've seen how God is taking me far from the street up to now where I am. It's God. Without God, I won't be here. I'm thankful for Missions of Hope.
Well, welcome, friends. Welcome back to West Side. Mary, you've been here a number of times. I think it's been a few years, Wallace, since you have been with us. So what a privilege to have both of you here with us at West Side today. Kenya is a beautiful country, and Nairobi is a busy, vibrant city. But the number of people who need extraordinary help, as I spoke of in the teaching a moment ago, the number of people who need that kind of help is massive. Can you just help us comprehend the kinds of needs that your ministry is addressing?
Yes, thank you so much. Nairobi is the capital city of Kenya, and that is where our ministry is based, and that's where we have our head office. And it happens that Kenya as a whole, people who live in extreme poverty, both among the urban poor and the rural poor, is over 70%. And when I say extreme poverty, it's whereby you find there are so many people who are living in the slums. Specifically, Missions of Hope work in Mathare Valley slums, which is about 3 miles long, half a mile wide, and over 800,000 people are packed in there. These people, what they call their homes, are shanties that are only 10 by 10 feet, and you'll find a family with a mom, a dad, and with 6 or 7 or 8 children living in such a small space. Of course, no running water, no electricity, sewage running right in front of what they call their homes because there is no proper sanitation. And you'll find that these people will live on less than $2 a day if they are lucky to find jobs. And those who live in the rural communities, it is even worse because they don't even have opportunities to try to go find work. And that is actually what makes people to move from the rural communities to the city, hoping they can get a better way of living. And so when I was in college, I learned about this community and through a friend, and I had just become a believer. And when this person explained to me about this community, I was shocked to hear that there were such places like the slums. And I went there one Saturday morning, and that became the turning point of my life because I had never seen poverty in that manner. And later I met my husband Wallace in a prayer meeting. By then he was working with PricewaterhouseCoopers, and as we became friends, I learned that he had also been to Mathare Valley. And as we became good friends, we realized that both of us had a heart to work and serve these people in the slums, and especially the children. And after we were married and we had 2 children, we started a small school with 50 kids in a rented space in the year 2000. And so the other day we just celebrated our 25th anniversary, and over the last 25 years, God has blessed our ministry. We are now in 38 locations across Kenya and 2 other countries. And we have 32,770 students attending our school.
So over 32,000 in 38 different locations, and also a couple of places outside of Kenya, West Africa, and also Ethiopia. You're serving, and Mohi is serving. So what blessing God has put on your ministry, and obviously, you've had to be visionary and faithful and courageous to do that. It's just fun to celebrate. When I first visited Missions of Hope in 2007, I was with a few pastor friends, and my memory is at that time you were serving a few hundred children. You had one location, and perhaps it just opened a second location. So now the fact that you have 38 locations and over 32,000 children. And it's not just the 32,000 children. Will you talk a little bit about how the children and your relationship with them leads to other opportunities for ministry?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, by then, you know, when you came, we had only 368. And we were working with the children also, with the families. In Missions of Hope, we use a holistic ministry model. We minister to the whole person, body, soul, and spirit. And the holistic ministry model, you know, is built on the principles of the gospel. You know, Jesus Christ ministered, you know, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And that is the same thing that we do. And so the holistic ministry model is, it has four pillars to it. We educate the next generation. And so the vulnerable children come to our schools and we give them quality Christian education using the curriculum. But we also teach them, you know, the word of God, because we get teachers who are Christians and who can love on these children. But we also give them two meals a day to address the malnutrition issues, but also to make sure that they attend school. And we also give them basic medical care through our nursing program or the clinics that we have alongside the schools. And the second pillar to the holistic ministry model is economic empowerment. We want to give back dignity, you know, to these families, because poverty robs people their dignity. But as we educate them and train them on how they can be able to start businesses and give them access to credit through our microfinance program, they can be able to earn, you know, income with dignity. And at the same time, we also train them in different trades so that they can be able to get employment or even start their own businesses. But we also get involved in the marketplace where we have social enterprises, like we have water bottling, we have a tours and travels company, and we also have clothes production, because all these children in our schools have to have uniforms. So we make them, and through that, we are able to create employment for the same parents and community members so that they can earn with dignity. And the third pillar to the ministry is restoration through health. And our emphasis is on preventive health education. But we also have curative services. And so alongside the schools, we have clinics. And recently, we just started a hospital. And a second one is in construction, which is combined with a special needs learning center. The fourth pillar, and most important, is the redemption ministry. Because at the core of the holistic ministry model is the sharing of the gospel. We do it intentionally, discipling the children, the parents, and the communities, so that we can plant churches alongside our centers. And so at every center, there is a church plant. And today we have 40 church plants. This leads to holistic transformation of the individual children and their families and the entire communities. And we believe that we should continue replicating this model, because it's replicable and we have seen its impact in different communities. And so, you know, in line with the vision of reaching out to the ends of the world, we will continue multiplying.
Yes, and the school, the schools are a community for the children and their families during their school years, but the church remains a spiritual community for them throughout their lives. And so I love the long-term view of that, and then the opportunity to reach others in the community through the church. That really is holistic. That is not just a lofty term in the case of Missions of Hope. It really is your active ministry model. And it's so good to see. And those of us who've been there have been able to see many of the aspects of it that you mentioned this morning. So Westside's investment and our child sponsorships have been focused in two areas primarily. One is the Bandeni region of the Mathari Valley, and then also in a Muslim community that is a short plane ride away from Nairobi, which some of us have been able to visit. We've been able to go to that community and see that work. I was there in the very early days of that work after you were building a relationship with the leaders of that community. Can you just tell us how the work in those two locations is going?
So we have been partnering with Westside in an area called Bodeni, which is one of the villages within the larger Mathare Valley slums. Bodeni actually means the lowest point of the valley. And so when we started working in Mathare Valley, there are these areas that were really feared. They were most scary areas. And Bodeni was actually one of them, because that is where we had a very high crime rate, a lot of prostitution going on, a lot of antisocial activities, drugs. And in fact, they had even a brewery along the river right there in Bodeni. And so it was scary for us even to go in there. And after Eddie came and visited us, March of 2007, we talked about, the question was, is there a place you'd want us to partner with us, to partner together? And I described to him about, this place, Bodeni, and it was how scary it was. And boldly he said, that's where I would want our church to partner. And I was like, wow, that's perfect, to get someone who is that bold. And we got into this community and we started a school, actually the same year in September. And we started this school. We rented some space there in some chanties there. And over the years, this school has grown. We now have two permanent tall buildings, 7 floors. And we have 1,100 students that are attending our Bodeni school. And we also have many others that have been able to graduate from this school. And now some of them are working with us as social workers, as teachers, as administrative staff, and as camp facilitators, all kinds of things. Others are working even in government jobs and other companies. And we also have a vibrant church that is right there in the community. And in fact, the pastor of that church, Steve, used to be one of the people that were brewing the local alcohol right there. And so now he's a pastor after being discipled.
So the local pastor was the local moonshiner before.
Yeah. And so what a great impact, because he's a living testimony of what God can do. And Pastor Steve and his family are doing such a fabulous ministry there. And then a few years later, we shared with Westside that God was calling us to go to this new community, which is northeastern side of Kenya, close to the border of Somalia. And again, another scary place. We had never gone to do a school or to try to do the ministry in a Muslim community. And after we shared, the leadership of this church again boldly said, yes, we are in this together. And we started a school there. And over the years, this community has embraced Missions of Hope fully. We have been able to actually love on them, love on their kids and these families, and the school is growing. We are actually just right now building a new dormitory so that the kids can even be able to stay in school as they are growing older and older. And more children from even neighboring villages want to come to that school. Only God can do this. And it is through this kind of bold partnership that we have with Westside.
Well, those of us, yes, let's just celebrate that. And a lot of the boldness and a lot of the vision with which you credit American pastors, we actually have drafted off of the two of you, and we're so grateful that God raised you up in such a time as this, for such a time as this, and it's just been such a privilege to be part of it. So what actually happens when people like us determine to give monthly support to sponsor a child through MOHI? Help us understand what happens and what these funds make possible.
Yeah, thank you so much. By investing in sponsoring a child, it literally changes the trajectory of that child. Instead of becoming, a criminal or being involved in antisocial activities, you give opportunity to a child that would otherwise not go to school to come to our Missions of Hope schools, where they can be able to be given quality Christian education, loved on by Christian teachers, and they get 2 meals a day, which addresses malnutrition, but also also encourages them to be in school. And we also give them basic medical care through our nursing program and our clinics that are in our schools. But also, these children give us an entry point, you know, to the families. And through our social workers who are intentionally sharing the gospel, but also interacting with these families and referring them to our empowerment programs. So what happens is that we are able to raise educated, health, and godly children that become change agents within their communities, who will eventually become people that are going to help their families break out of the cycle of poverty, but also bring transformation to that entire community holistically with a church plant and so many other programs that give back the dignity, you know, to these community members.
Yeah, we love being a part of that, and it's so fun. And I know if we had time, you could tell story after story after story of individuals and the transformation that has occurred in their lives, and it really is inspiring to hear about. And as we become involved in sponsorship, we actually get to see that happening in real time, and we receive news not only about our child, but about what's going on in the ministry and the communities in which we're involved. And it's always inspirational to read those reports and to see what God is doing. We all want our efforts and our investments that we make in compassion or in Christian ministry to bear fruit. So you've talked about how the ministry impacts lives, children's lives and families. Can you talk a little bit about the impact on the broader communities as the ministry to individuals and to families has taken place? Has there been an impact on the communities?
Sure. You'll find that in the communities where we are serving, literally there is transformation that is taking place because, for example, in the slums, there used to be a lot of fear. People didn't want to even come close to the slums because of the crime rates that were there. But today, you can be able to walk even with your phone and be able to even take pictures of things and people, and nobody will steal from you because the crime rate has gone low. In fact, it was very difficult for young men especially to grow to become responsible adults. And most of the times, young boys like below age 25, they would even be killed before they even reach 25 because of crime, getting involved in crime. But today, you find a lot of young people strong, who are eager to be great leaders, and they are God-fearing, they are involved in the local churches as leaders, as youth leaders, and others have been able to even go to college. Like, there is no way parents would talk about their children going to university, but those conversations have now changed. When they converse together, they are talking about what college is your child attending. You know, just like all of us here could be talking about their children and how they are doing, those conversations are now normal conversations in those communities. And you'll find that even the because the people now are more empowered, they now have a voice. They can even be able to talk and speak to their elected leaders to be able to bring resources to their community. Like those who came to Mathare Valley in previous years, you probably noticed there were no paved roads, but today there are paved roads because people are talking to their leaders and ensuring that they are not ignored like before. And there used to be cases of a lot of malnutrition, and you look around and children are healthy, happy, vibrant, and they are growing well. And even when you go to the rural communities, there are some communities that, you know, people never talked about having education opportunities, but now they do. And so it is changing, and it is changing the physical lives of these people, their literacy levels, but also the spiritual levels of these communities because of the local churches. And only God can do that.
Amen. Amen. Let's just keep celebrating. Well, Wallace and Mary, thank you. It is always a great pleasure to see you and to be with you. We are so grateful that out of all the places that you could be, that you would choose to be with us today. It really is an honor to have you. And we thank you. So will you thank them again for spending time with us?